This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. You could say today's program is built on sand, but we have a solid foundation for discussing why it is in short supply and how that affects you in just a moment. First, we'll focus on a major new series from NPR News that relies on us using much more sand, specifically our need for more housing. 10 years after the global financial meltdown, we have a new and different housing crisis. Home values have rebounded, but folks looking to buy their first house are often priced out. Construction is at its lowest level in nearly 6 decades, according to new research. Now, this isn't just a problem in New York or in San Francisco, where I can tell you from personal experience, the market is absolutely bananas. We are talking about mid-sized, fast-growing cities like Des Moines, Iowa, and Durham, North Carolina, and Boise, Idaho. That's where NPR's Kirk Sigler began his reporting, and he joins us now from NPR West to discuss it. Kirk, welcome to 1A.
Thank you. Hello, Joshua.
You can tell I'm still traumatized over the San Francisco housing market. It hasn't left me, even though I live on a different coast. I wonder if that's kind of at the heart of the issues you're trying to address, the same kinds of things we see in big cities or something different.
Well, actually, I mean, we could talk for hours about Los Angeles, too, where I'm talking to you from. But what's interesting or actually troubling when you talk to a lot of people, it's not affecting just those places. If we use the West Coast here as an example, it's a nationwide problem, but the West Coast is probably getting hit the most with the skyrocketing housing. And so people are leaving and they are moving to cheaper places. And what that does is bring up the cost of housing. So you sell your place in the Bay Area and all of a sudden your money goes a whole lot farther in Boise, Idaho. You sell your place in a place like Denver, which is also booming, and you move to a smaller town or Kansas City, and suddenly your money goes a lot farther there, but it's also affecting the market. It's just one of many, many reasons that are contributing to why we have this situation in front of us.
I'm sure you've gotten quite a response from the audience to this. And I should note, by the way, we will be discussing this with Kirk just for this first part of the program. So if you have questions or thoughts about the rising cost of housing where you live, we welcome them. Email us, 1A@WAMU.org. Comment on our Facebook page. Tweet us at 1A. And yes, we know that one segment is not enough to get the full conversation in, but we will revisit this topic. So share your thoughts with us. Share what you know about the rising cost of housing, 1A@WAMU.org. Let's talk about Boise, which is the first report to air in this series. You speak to someone named Tom Manschreck, who's an affordable housing project developer. He's standing at a construction site talking about what Boise is doing to try and address the housing crunch. Here is part of what Tom said.
Boise's making all the best place to do all these things and all these magazines. If we don't, as a development community and as a citizenry, recognize that we have got to house people who work here, then we're not doing our job.
Tom Manschreck in Boise, Idaho. Kirk Sigler, why is a place like Boise having these kinds of problems? Is it just inherent to a booming city, or are there things that Boise might be doing wrong?
Well, there's a lot of pressure to do something in Boise, and there aren't a whole lot of tools. So what Tom Manschreck is talking about there, he's standing on a site that's basically being subsidized. So you subsidize some of the costs of building as well as some of the land, the purchasing of land by a city. So that can make it a little bit more feasible for a private developer to come in and be encouraged to build more affordable housing. What's actually happening in Boise and so many other places is that because land is in such short supply right now, because the labor shortage is so acute, there just aren't many people in the trades anymore after the housing crash, and a number of other factors, developers are building more high-end because they know they can get a return on their investment. Now, the problem with that, I don't have to go into too much, I imagine, for all of your listeners, but gentrification and building more high-end means that, you know, where are you going to house the teachers, the firefighters, the people who make a city tick? And what Boise is trying to do is they have a goal. The mayor told me they have a goal of building 1,000 apartments in this tract of land, kind of close to the urban core of the city. 1,000 apartments a year is what they figure they need. They're actually way behind in that goal. And just by building apartments, they think that can kind of alleviate some of the huge demand for housing right now.
it's interesting that there are people leaving rural areas, Kirk, and have been for decades, moving into more urban areas. So it's not that there's no housing. It's just that the housing isn't where people exactly. are going. It's where newer markets aren't necessarily taking root, where new college graduates and entrepreneurs are not eager to live.
Right. And the rural, the fact that this is affecting rural areas as well was certainly an interesting thing that was revealed in some of our reporting for this series, because as you say, it's puzzling, right? We hear a lot about rural America just sort of emptying out. But then when you go to some of these places, you find that, well, actually, the housing prices are also skyrocketing there. I visited Ogallala, Nebraska, which is about 3 hours northeast of Denver. It's pretty remote, but home prices there were going for $200,000, sometimes $300,000. And it's really a shortage of adequate housing. So some of these houses in places like that, and for cities for that matter too, just haven't been updated. And people, one of the other factors, I mean, I keep talking about all these factors contributing to this. There's a dizzying amount of them.
Yeah.
But one big one is the fact that people are aging in place. It sounds kind of like an academic phrase, which it is, but people just aren't leaving the houses that they've lived in for years and years. And if they do, and they try to sell them, they may need $40,000-$50,000 in upgrades, and that's contributing to a shortage of adequate housing in small towns.
We're speaking to NPR's Kirk Sigler about a new series on housing in America and the trouble that many of us are having in finding an affordable place to live, no matter where in the country we live. We'd love to hear from you, 1A@WAMU.org. Sean wrote on our website, the1A.org, the mistake made last time the housing market was stoked is the same one exemplified by the premise of this story, implying that everyone should be buying a home. That is not the right economic move for everyone and can have bad consequences for those that bet wrong on a house and end up in foreclosure or bankruptcy as a result. Kirk, I don't know that the premise of the story is that everyone should buy a home, but I think I take Sean's point. I mean, I remember during the George W. Bush administration, there was a real strong emphasis on home ownership, especially among black and brown folks, and especially after the housing crisis when, you know, in some parts of the country, home prices just tanked and a lot of people moved into the market. I wonder if that has something to do with where we are today.
Sure. And we have to remember that after the crash, lending got a lot tighter. So it's actually a little bit more difficult to even get approved for some of these loans. We are not seeing, though, the big difference that I'm hearing in reporting this series, especially in Idaho. We're just not seeing people coming in and speculating and buying up properties and flipping them. People are actually living in these homes. The one study that we cite in the reporting in Boise shows that there's a demand for 10 times the amount of homes that are even being built. So people are actually buying in these. The one big thing that, you know, I just heard from a listener after hearing the first Morning Edition piece this morning that we will be getting into later in the week in the series is that this is all happening at a time when wages are more or less stagnant. And, you know, reporting on this, I had this realization, Joshua, that, like, you know, we hear about how great the economy is. The economy is so great. It's growing. But it's pretty clear that it's just growing for a certain number of people. There are a lot of people on the margins. There are a lot of people who are middle class people that we talk to in the series who can't afford to buy a house, let alone even rent. And if they sell their house, that's great. They might make some money, but they can't afford anything else. So I think communities like Boise are having some pretty tough conversations right now about how to go forward. And like you say, whether or not home ownership really is a worthy dream, the right. old American dream to shoot for.
Before we let you go, I did want to play one clip from someone we'll hear from later this week, from Jacob Hovendick. Let's hear a little of what he has to say, and then you can explain who Jacob is.
The federal government's not coming to help us. The state government, to a certain extent, can't come help us. No one's coming to our rescue. We kind of have to start helping ourselves.
Kirk, before we have to let you go, who is Jacob? I believe it's Jacob Hovendick. Is that it?
That's right. He lives in Ogallala, Nebraska, which I mentioned just a few moments ago. Is somebody who was sort of enticed to move out to a small town from Lincoln, Nebraska, where he grew up. He likes the small town lifestyle. And I don't want to say that, you know, this is all just crisis. People are doing things to address this problem. And what Jacob is talking about is this sort of phenomenon that small towns in particular, you know, for years and years have been depending or relying on USDA rural development funds, all kinds of federal and state support to, you know, stay afloat.
Right.
And they're starting to realize that they're going to have to start from the ground up. So what that town is looking to do is propose to voters to ask for a sales tax to be put into a very small sales tax to be put into a pool of funds that can entice private developers to come build workforce housing because, okay. you know, they can't attract new workers to keep the town thriving because there's nowhere for them to live.
NPR's Kirk Sigler has got a new series on housing airing. The first piece aired on Morning Edition today. You can find it online at npr.org. Kirk, thanks for talking to us.
Glad to be here.
Coming up, we'll ask, what's in a grain of sand? And what's a grain of sand worth? Which gives us this excuse to replay a moment from the classic movie Local Hero.
I'll buy you any beach you want. And I'll give you 750,000 pounds to set yourself up with.
You're great at talking with the big numbers, Mr. See, look, you're good at numbers, eh?
Part of my job, yes.
Right. Would you give me a pound note for every grain of sand I hold in my hand? Now, you can have the beach for that. There. Saved you a pound or two, eh?
Come on, Ben, I don't want to play games. I negotiate in a business-like way.
Oh, dear, Lynn. You could have had a very nice purchase there, Mr. McIntyre. I can't hold much more than 10,000 grains of sand in my hand at a time. Did you think it would be a bigger number?
When it comes to sand, the numbers are usually bigger. Author Vince Beiser says sand is key to our lives, and we're rapidly running out of it. He'll join us after the break. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.